You're listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast with your hosts, Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. Owen and myself, Bobby McMahon, are both taking a break, but we will be back within a week or so to continue with the podcast. As it is, we've got over 50 in the bag, and producer Luke has taken the time to go over the best of the pod from the last year and taken some of the bits you've told us you've liked and edit them together in the best of the pod. So we hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back soon.
His comments were cancerous, and by that I mean they were just toxic. There was no basis for what he was saying. There was no proof of what he was saying. It was just words. And it's a dangerous precedent when a manager, or anyone for that matter, comes into a public arena and just speaks mindless tosh. Because ultimately, we've had many instances of it in the past, normally political, where people get into a ring and they just say things. And because there's a forceful personality saying those things, people leave thinking that that person is correct. Mm-hmm. So there are people out there today, most notably supporters of Real Madrid,
yes,
and most notably people who write for Marca in Spain, who look at Mourinho and say, that's exactly right, Jose. What you are saying is 100% correct. And you should be applauded for saying it. Barcelona are scum. Yeah. They have had this incentive every time they play in the Champions League. They have had the support of UEFA. There has been dark art underscoring their whole journey through Champions League in years past. Yeah. This is a conspiracy. Jose, you are 100% correct.
I was just gonna say
that. And you will continue to be our man.
Yeah.
And it is sick. It is so disgusting what this guy has done. And he should be so ashamed of himself. Least we not forget, this is a Jose Mourinho whose, I suppose, first success came with FC Porto.
Yeah.
The year before they won the Champions League in 2004, they played Celtic in a very, very infamous UEFA Cup final, which is memorable, yes, for Porto's win, but also for the sheer mortification that you felt for the Porto players, who were diving, so blatantly cheating, play-acting, feigning injury from the beginning of the game to the end of the game. This was the same Jose Mourinho who, when he took over at Chelsea, was involved in numerous incidents where, again, it came back to the persona of the special one. I can do no wrong. And ultimately, I can do anything because I would be allowed to get away with it. The winking at Liverpool supporters and the mouthing to them to be quiet in the League Cup final.
Giving them the shushy finger.
Exactly. Even when he was still at Porto in the 2004 game against Manchester United, taking victory so humbly by racing up and down the touchline at Old Trafford, celebrating, I think it was Costinha's equalising goal in the 90th minute in injury time at the last kick of the game. This is a guy who's made a career out of being disrespectful even when his side has won games.
Yeah.
So when his side loses, why are we surprised that he behaves like this?
Yeah.
And I said it to you earlier, and I think it must be said on the podcast as well. People in England who follow the game quite intimately have said, you know what we miss? We miss Jose. When he left, there's been a vacuum. His personality, his colourful exuberance. Mm. Now, everything is just bland. Let me ask people who are listening to this podcast, what would you prefer? Would you prefer Carlo Ancelotti, who has been so professional, so gentlemanly in his approach to this
class,
consistent, persistent questioning of his future at Chelsea? Or would you prefer this horrible, decrepit creature that is Jose Mourinho, the Gollum of football management? What would you prefer? Because I think with people out there who follow the game, they mistake the game for pre-game, post-game, and everything that happens in between. Ultimately, that's a pantomime.
Is this finally put to rest the fact that Avram Grant is not up to it as a Premier League manager?
I was thinking about Avram Grant.
Who would hire Avon Grant from now on?
Here's my take.
Owen was silent.
Here's my take on Avram Grant. Avram Grant is like that girl in school who was always attracted to the bad boys. And even though she teams. Always knew that she'd get her heart broken, she always thinks she could change him. She'd get involved. It's okay. I know he's got problems. I know he treats me so bad, but I can change him. You look at Chelsea.
Did she work cheap as well?
She travelled around knocking shops in Portsmouth. Not sure. But basically, he was at Chelsea. Job he should never have taken.
Well, it even goes back beyond that. But his first kickoff was Portsmouth, yeah, wasn't it? Director of football. And the Harry Redknapp famous quote about offering to drive him up to London.
Then he goes to Portsmouth as manager after his spell at Chelsea. And that ends in unmitigated disaster. Obviously, you end up in a cup final, so you're full of romance. But ultimately, your club is in disarray. You walk into work, you don't even know who owns it on that particular day of the week. Whose turn is it today? Is it? And then he ends up with West Ham, with Statler and Waldorf as the guys running the club, and Miss Piggy joining them as well in the mix. All the Muppet fans obviously would appreciate that reference. This is just bizarre. There was a situation where West Ham were 2-0 up away at Wigan at the DW Stadium. The cameras went on David Gold in the crowd and Karen Brady, who both had faces like thunder.
Faces of somebody that had lost $10 and found a dime.
It was just ridiculous. They're clearly hoping that the club would be relegated. And also, I'd like to point out that they tried to fire Grant back in January
and screwed it up royally.
And they just somehow managed to make a mess of firing their manager. So, I mean, for West Ham fans out there, it's sad because West Ham were one of these teams that you become so accustomed in enjoying in the Premier League.
So anyway, so let's go into the midfield. We're going to look at the midfield. What have you got? You got four in the midfield?
I've got, four and a half.
Four and a half? I've kind of got four and a half as well. I've got the two up front, but I'm expecting one of them to drop back.
Yes.
Yeah, so ditto. I think we're talking about the same formation here. So let's look at the wide players in midfield first.
Again?
Yes.
Offensive magic. Right side, Landon Donovan.
Oh, okay.
I'm sticking him right because I need him in my team, and just okay, to make my team work, he needs to go right.
I've got him up front. He's my player that's drifting back.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Left side, let's share the man love.
Yes,
Houston Dynamo's Brad Davis. Just an incredible person. Fantastic. Left winger, just his delivery.
But left footed players always look better.
Yeah,
I've always been jealous of players with left feet, mainly because I haven't got one.
Well, and
you've got one though, don't you? Your left
really.
Foot? No,
not really.
You use it for standing on as well?
I use it for standing on, and for usually kicking opponents.
Oh,
but obviously when the referee's not watching. So sometimes my left foot can be very deft. And
daft?
Depending on whether or not you're a teammate, you know. Brad Davis. Actually, one standout thing when I was composing this team was how many dead ball specialists I had in here.
Yeah.
Davis, 9 assists this season for Dynamo. And I don't know how many of them are from corners and free kicks. And he's just got an amazing way of just wrapping his foot around the ball, pinging it
Where
in.
Where would Houston Dynamo be without Brad Davis this year?
And because they've got such
probably
a...
Probably where they were last year.
Yeah, they've got such a big team.
Yeah.
So obviously their threat in the air is such a huge positive for them. But I reckon between Davis and a couple of other players in my lineup, we could cause certainly problems for set
And
pieces.
Who would that other player be? Do you want to get into that just now, or do you want to wait for my... Do you want me to throw my selection in?
Throw your selection in.
Well, Brad Davis is the other one on the left side. But my right side, I'm kind of sensing that my right side midfield player is going to be one of your centre midfield players. Is it? We can't get through without talking about him. Come on.
No.
It's Bex.
It is?
Okay. I think it's been on record as I think Beckham is great at what he does. I think he's been made out to be a far more complete player than he actually is. But what he does do, he is very good at, and he continues to be good at. And that's why I've got him in my side. I've got him on the right side of midfield, even though he has been making more regular appearances in the centre of midfield.
I think he would be a fool of the highest proportion not to include David Beckham in an all-star MLS team. This season, he's stepped up to the plate.
Oh, well, you're okay. The fans have agreed with you.
Have they?
He's in here, yes.
That's surprising.
The midfield they've got is Oh, God. I guess it's five midfield players here. No, it's got four midfield. What a strange...
3-4-3.
They've got a very strange lineup. Yeah, it looks like 3-4-3. They've got Beckham, Limpier, Dwayne De Rosario and Landon Donovan. My God, who's gonna win the ball in there?
That's strange.
I guess tackling is not allowed in this game.
No. Certainly
or
not.
Even anticipation or interceptions.
Yeah, I've gone with Beckham playing centrally.
Yeah.
Just because I think that... one big thing about MLS teams is you need guys who can keep hold of the ball. And Beckham's distribution is second to none.
His positional play and his positional sense is still excellent.
Yeah, and you put him with a decent runner alongside him.
Janinho. He's had a good season.
In LA's case. But he also comes up with 7 assists so far this season.
You been into the stats again?
I just enjoy...
You've been drinking the stats again.
I just enjoy looking at... Oh, look. My picks are backed up statistically.
You're just trying to protect your butt, aren't you?
And I'm not.
Yes, it sounds
offensive
very much like...
Offensive magic is what I say.
Isn't what it is?
Yeah.
To put a little bit of humour into this, the Gervinho slap, right? Reminds me of Wayne Gretzky. With a little hockey analogy, hockey story here. But Wayne Gretzky, when he came in the NHL as a young boy and played in the old WHA as well, Dave Semenko. Concrete Hans Semenko used to be Wayne Gretzky's bodyguard, and there used to be comments about it. And one night, apparently, Gretzky decided that he had enough and he was going to take the law into his own hands, and he got into a bit of a barney in the corner, and somebody in the crowd stood up and shouted, "Wayne, make a fist." Because he was just slapping the guy. And that was kind of Gervinho, right? It was just a... Like, Barton's just out here on an absolute... branch, isn't he? Because he's complaining about Gervinho diving. And what does he do?
Now, I'm going to do something...
Twitter that in 140 characters.
I'm going to do something really strange here, because isn't the most interesting thing throughout the Joey Barton saga is looking at Joey Barton, not what Joey Barton does? What I mean by that is... guys like Mark Van Bommel, scumbags. He's just, you know, but he's their scumbag. Without him, Holland, not as good a side. Joey Barton, I believe, is a very good footballer. Now,
now we're talking about Joey Barton footballer, as opposed to Joey Barton vigilante.
Yes, exactly. The guy outside McDonald's, probably not so much. I just think that there needs to be a correlation here. Barton has gotten himself involved with this. Firstly, he makes a stupid mistake in going over and getting involved to begin with. But, ultimately, he's slapped. If that is Roy Keane, if that is Vinnie Jones, two other tough guys, they're going to hit the deck. Because, ultimately, they're footballers and they know what can get another guy
sent off. Do you really think Roy Keane would have hit the deck? Do you think Gervinho would have hit Roy Keane?
Gervinho wouldn't have hit Roy Keane.
Right.
Barton, a little bit of a different fish. But I just think that we've seen guys before who are apparently hard men fall like a ton of bricks because they know that their reactions are going to get another player sent off.
But the fact is, would these players have gone up and hauled Gervinho up and accused him of diving to begin with? There's an awful lot of people dislike him. I don't think Van Bommel would be complaining about other people doing what he does.
I think he's just covering his tracks.
I don't think Roy Keane would either.
I don't think, firstly, Roy Keane would have had a Twitter account. You know, I don't think that Roy Keane would have been tweeting Robbie Savage having a back and forth. Barton doesn't help himself in that manner.
He is very much the... Yeah, he is, you know, the as author as, of his own demise.
Exactly. As much as Barton has matured quite significantly compared to what he used to be...
I don't think he's actually matured. He's just grown. I know that I'm playing with words here. But the maturity isn't there. He's just grown. He's expanded. But the level of maturity is still not there. Capello, and we talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago, Capello's talking about you can't trust him. That's exactly the problem. Why coaches will not sign him, because they can't trust him. Now, somebody will sign him, but he will be the big fish in the small pond, because that's the only role he can play. You cannot trust him in terms of that bigger team and that bigger team role. He will find some way of screwing things up. He will shoot himself in the foot. After shooting somebody else's foot.
I think it's a lot more multifaceted.
Yeah,
I think, like, if you look at Barton last season at Newcastle, 4 goals, 9 assists.
Now, that's a big integral part of Newcastle's season.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's the greatest player in the world, but he's a really useful
small
player.
Big fish in
now,
small pond.
In this situation, has he been sinned against? Yeah, I think so. Has he been stupid? Yeah. But someone's hit him in the face. He's gone down.
Hit him in the face?
He's got a slap in the face.
But Owen, he's just accused Gervinho of diving.
That's on Twitter, though.
He's just gone and hauled him up because he's manhandling him because he thinks Gervinho dived. And then he does exactly the same thing.
Because in the Gervinho incident, there's no contact. As far as Barton's seen it, there's no contact.
So the fact that he gets a little rub down the side of the face...
It's contact.
And we haven't even got to the next bit yet, which is Stephen Taylor, who obviously has imaginary eyes in the back of his head, running around telling the referees that Barton's been elbowed.
Listen. I just think that in this incident, it's far easier for people to have a go at Joey Barton than to look at Gervinho and go... What are you doing? Why are you raising your hand?
But that's a referee's job, not Joey Barton's.
What? Yeah,
who made absolutely. Joey Barton a referee?
No one.
Well, exactly. Self-appointed vigilante.
Look, I just think people are being too harsh on Barton in this incident.
Really?
Yeah.
Do the people out there think the same way?
People out there will go, "You're talking absolute bollocks."
No. You know, it's very populist. You'll probably have, I'm guessing, at least 30 or 40% saying you're right.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, you take out Arsenal Sports. Because actually, before that specific incident, Barton's tapped into a very populist kind of theme. This kind of vigilante Clint Eastwood, I'll tell authority what I think of them and there's no repercussions for it, I'm my own man kind of theme. It plays out very well. You take the number of people. Hey, we had people talking about Arsenal. Why Arsenal should sign Joey Barton, right, last week?
Yes.
You've got people, if you don't have to make that decision and you don't have to live with the ramifications of a Joey Barton in your dressing room, It's very easy just to say, I'd sign Joey Barton if I was manager. You wouldn't if you were the manager, though, because you just know the repercussions of it. Robbie Keane. Really a move out of the blue. Didn't see that one coming.
Apparently Robbie didn't see it coming either. Going by his unveiling, the CEO of AEG, who was Tim Lewicki, spoke in glowing terms of how quickly this particular deal came about. He stepped up to kind of welcome Robbie to the franchise and was detailing, you know, took us 2 years to get David Beckham to agree to come here.
I thought
here.
You said it was Tim Lewicki. It sounds like it was John Wayne doing the press conference.
Listen. Button it, all right? A lot of people are very fond of my impressions on this podcast. So then he continued, barring the ignorant interruption. He continued by saying, Landon took us about 12 months before he agreed to come back to California. From Robbie's case, it took him 7 days to agree to get here. And there's just silence in the room. And Robbie's kind of looking bemused. Has he just insulted me? Or what do I do here? Apparently on a Friday afternoon, someone got in touch from the LA Galaxy and went, here's our offer. And Keane went, yeah, I'll take that. What do we have to do to make this deal happen?
Is this a deal that really kind of satisfies perhaps Robbie's ego as much as anything? Because it wasn't looking like Premier League was... There's much Premier League interest in him.
Well, I think there was Premier League interest in him if he took a cut in his wages.
Dropped significantly down the league.
Yeah, I mean, from Spurs...
He was at West Ham last year trying to dig them out of relegation trouble.
Also, though, he was injured for 6 weeks after initially coming. You know, I think that people will look at his time at West Ham and go, oh, we didn't save him from relegation, that means he's crap. I think that, you know...
I think we said that, actually.
This is where we play in the archive clip.
Yeah.
Severe egg on our face. I think, you know, I've been on Twitter and having back and forth with a lot of people about this. Robbie Keane is not an MLS player. I think he still has a lot to offer a Premier League side. I think that even a championship would be a step down for him. The Robbie Keane story has started with a bang. Because, as you alluded to in your intro, he scored against San Jose Earthquakes in his first game, literally off the plane from London. And also, we should not forget, I'm sorry about this, I'm sorry for picking on it. This is just such a cosmetic thing. But Robbie Keane arrived at LAX Airport And Robbie Keane is married to a girl from Ireland called Claudine. And mutton dressed as lamb is all I'm going to say. The pair arrive and they come through and there's probably a gathering of about 12 people with Irish flags and whatever. Woo, Robbie, we love you, man.
Rent a leprechaun.
Rent a leprechaun. And they're there posing for paparazzi photographs with Claudine Keane being every wag stereotype that you could possibly be, with her Christian Louboutin 6-inch heels, her midriff on show, and a pair of bright blue jeans that are clung to her ass. Robbie just standing next to her, kind of looking bemused by the whole experience. And they just look like two people from Ireland who have arrived in LAX and are going, all right, this is LA then. This is pretty exciting. And people expecting a David Beckham-esque sort of experience, you're not going to get it. Look at his press conference. He's not the most personality-driven of individuals. And it was funny because you had like the three amigos. You had Keane, Donovan and Beckham in a row. And it was just a litany of just banality. It was like you begin with Keane. Al Robbie, you must be so amazed that you've arrived in Major League Soccer. Yeah, you know, it's been great, you know, and I'm looking forward to kind of, you know, playing. Well, this question's for Landon. Landon, what does a player like Robbie bring to the locker room?
Well, you know, Robbie, I've got a lot of time for Robbie. He's a great player.
This one is for David. David, you've obviously experienced, you know, Robbie from his time at Spurs. What's he like?
Well, obviously, Robbie's just a talented professional. It's just great for him to be here.
Well, amazing. Thank you for that. Shedding so much light on the signing of a new designated player. All of you are just so entertaining. Thank you all for your time and good night.
This game was strange. At the end, for about 10 minutes after the full-time whistle, I was sat in my living room, just silent and motionless. It was as if you had genuinely lost a kind of a person that you've known for quite a while. It was somber. It was uncomfortable. It was just odd. It was an odd atmosphere. And at full time, what I was saying to people, if United beat Chelsea or Man City 8-2, there would be riots in Manchester. I mean, you know, it would have carried so much weight, delight, and fans would have reveled in it. Because it's Arsenal. It was as if you were having an affair with the wife of your best mate, you know. As you were getting the deed done, you just had this pang of kind of guilt attached to everything you did, and it was you know, Rooney scoring a hat trick. You saw after it was set to make it 7-2, the camera went on Ferguson. He just wasn't even celebrating anymore. It was like a slow, painful execution, and And I still, even talking about it now, Manchester United beat Arsenal 8-2. Like, even speaking about it, that is wrong. It should not have happened. That is a fantasy score. There's like, you know, somehow this did happen. And I suppose it's our job to talk about how it happened.
So, is there any mitigating circumstances you can, for Arsenal fans out there?
Let's start off. Arsenal were missing a whole team. Song suspended, Gervinho suspended, Frimpong suspended, Wilshere injured, Sanya injured, Vermaelen injured.
Diaby.
From there, though, I mean, so, you know, the game started, you saw the two lineups and you went, oh dear, this could be bad.
I didn't even realise Sanya was missing. It was so bad. There were so many changes to it. Until the commentator told me
you
that Sanya
keep up
was ill.
It.
I didn't realise he was out. Just because there was a mass of people out.
Yeah.
And this is very difficult. I find this quite difficult because you don't want to, I don't want to sound like an apologist, but there are certain things that have to, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No.
The people out there, the Piers Morgans of the world, the insightful soccer people that we know occupy this great landscape of soccer.
Yeah, Piers spent Saturday buzzing people who were setting their hair on fire for being talentless. And then on Sunday was preaching to us all about how Arsene Wenger should be sacked.
Yes, well.
Interesting world we live in.
Yeah, very. But getting rid of Wenger isn't going to make anything better. They were missing a lot of players. But to me, if you look at...
There's 25 attempts on goal from United. There's 20 from Arsenal. Now, the quality of the strikes were somewhat different. You know, you could look at Van Persie's penalty and say, if that goes in, does it make a difference? Somehow, I don't think so. It just wasn't that kind of... It was a case of trying to stay close rather than anything else. But to me, the two things that really stood out was the dominance of United's wingers with Nani and Young and the ineptitude of Arsenal's fullbacks. Now, we're talking about a young Carol Jenkinson here and a Traore who was out on loan last year at Juventus and was, two seasons ago, was third on a poor third on the pecking order. But it was absolutely United's strengths against absolutely abysmal weakness as far as Arsenal's concerned, and so much stuff was generated in wide positions. Mm-hmm. And when you got Giroud playing the centre half, who is a backup centre half at best, it was awful stuff to watch if you're an Arsenal fan.
Arsenal have no players. They have no players. This 11 that Wenger put out on Sunday was the strongest 11 that he could play given the circumstances. It wasn't an 11 that he had specifically set up in order to go, listen, there are deficiencies, we're probably going to lose, so let's go out and keep it tight. This was 11 players. They were the only 11 players he could play. You looked at the bench, Schumacher still couldn't get a game. You're like, he must feel like the most depressed man in England.
Was Bentner on the bench?
No. This was, because ultimately, you ask yourself, Arsenal fans ask themselves, how did we get here? Because you've got Carl Jenkinson at right back. Why? Why are you at right back? Why do we have Traore at left back? I'll tell you why. Well, you sold your first choice left back, Gael Clichy, to Manchester City for £7 million. And your excuse was, well, his contract's up next season anyway, you can go for free. He's your first choice left back. We talked about this in the podcast before. You cannot have that attitude and expect to get away with it. Chances is, oh, well, Kieran Gibbs will just play left back. What happens if he gets injured? Vermaelen can play left back. Hang on. You can't just suppose and guess that that's what's going to happen. You cannot just lose a first choice player and someone else just fills in for them. And that seems to be the attitude. I also have this problem. Arsene Wenger has known for the last 2 years that Cesc Fabregas is going to Barcelona. He needs to replace Fabregas, not with one player.
But you can't replace Fabregas.
You can't replace Fabregas. Same way you can't replace Gold. Mm-hmm. But you need to have some sort of indication that there is a plan there. Now, is the plan Jack Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey? Now, that's not a plan. Because Ramsey, firstly, has proven that his fitness is questionable.
Well, no. No, 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 no.
Why?
What do you mean? He's fitness. He broke his leg.
He broke his leg.
Well, that happens to any player. It doesn't mean he's
He's out for a long period.
Yeah. So, but that's a broken leg.
He's done for a season.
It's not like he breaks down every week.
It's not.
He's not Theo Walcott.
But who comes in and replaces Ramsey?
You got an assortment of midfield players.
But none of them are any good.
Well, but... Really? Really? You're saying none of these... You're saying you've got Song there, you've got Frimpong coming through, you've got Wiltshire.
See, this is what I'm amazed by. Frimpong, that performance against Liverpool, is that supposed to convince people that he's what? A new, incredible, powerful midfielder?
Yes.
This guy is still raw.
Yes.
Unproven.
Yes.
So young.
Yes.
You cannot base your future... Arsenal are in dire straits. You cannot expect a 19-year-old fullback going out at Old Trafford and be anything else than a 19-year-old fullback playing at Old Trafford.
Agreed.
The same way for your debutant in central midfield. You cannot expect miracles from guys who don't deserve to be handing out miracles. These guys are inexperienced. You cannot just put them into situations and expect them to just deliver performances.
But you just rattled off 8 players that were missing.
What do you mean?
You rattled off, right, we want to go through them. You got Song, Frimpong, right?
Yeah.
Gervinho, Diaby, Vermaelen. Who else is there? There was 8 players out. So,
yeah.
So you're talking about Arsenal's second team. You're not talking about Arsenal's first team.
But their second team, if that's Arsenal's second team, that was United's second team.
Well, they got to be, okay, so United's second team beats Arsenal's second team 8-2.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean Arsenal's in dire straits.
But it does.
Why? Because they're going to play their second team the rest of the season?
No, because it taps into the same subject that for 6 years we've been talking about. Arsenal have no depth. Have we not been having this back and forth?
No, for... I don't think it's been a case of Arsenal having any depth. I think it's a case of Arsenal not signing a couple of players in key positions that's held them back. I don't think it's been a depth situation.
Really?
Yes. Why has it been depth?
But what else has it been?
It's been about key positions. It's been about a goalkeeper that shouldn't have been there for a long time. They finally found a goalkeeper. But it's about not having a centre-back, and for a while it was about not having a midfield player.
But if you look at the players that took to the field on Sunday, but, you were what, hoping for a miracle from Andre Arshavin and Thomas Szczęsny?
You're taking eight players out of Liverpool side. What have you got? Take away the first-choice Liverpool back four, and what have you got?
What, an 8-2 defeat to Manchester United?
I don't know. Well, I guess you'd only find out.
But the thing is, has this not been coming, though? Is this inevitable? That there is going to be a crumbling moment that showcases the distinct weaknesses within this Arsenal setup.
But a crumbling moment doesn't lead to being in dire straits and plummeting down the league.
What else would you call Arsenal at the moment, though?
They're in trouble.
In trouble?
Yeah.
One point from three games.
How many points did they get these three games last year?
Yeah, but hang on.
Two.
It's the circumstances within 1 point from three games.
Right.
Beaten by Liverpool at home.
Yes.
And handed... an absolute,
but you just said
thrashing.
Owen, you just said
Manchester United.
You just said it was Arsenal's second team. It was Manchester United's second team. So we've now agreed that Manchester United's second team is better than Arsenal's second team by 8-2.
Yeah, but not by 4-2.
No, but so
there's the gulf in class, right?
So Arsenal are not going to get these eight players back at any point this year.
Of course they are.
So what happens
then?
Are they good enough?
But hang on, but by that you're saying, oh well, eventually we'll get our best players back and everything will be okay. Surely, as a manager and as a set, you need to plan for situations like this.
How can you plan for eight players being out?
Because you have to have depth to your club.
How many teams?
Hang on a second. No. If Manchester United lose eight players, if they lose Rooney, Vidic, Rio, Fletcher, Carrick, Evra, a goalkeeper, Valencia, who can they bring in? Danny Welbeck went off his sub. Javier Hernandez came on to replace him. Now, Welbeck is a youngster who's
so
playing.
So you're talking about United. You're talking about City. Does Chelsea fall into that?
No, hang on a second.
Could Chelsea do it?
If we're talking about money, are we coming back to money now?
No. I'm just talking about the teams that could handle that kind of... Whether we're dealing with a rule of thumb that everybody can do this except Arsenal.
No.
Okay. United have got depth. City have got depth, right? Have Chelsea got that kind of depth?
I'm not sure. Would a Chelsea second string squad lose 8-2 to Manchester United?
I don't know. We're not going to know
Chelsea,
that.
Would Chelsea be but handing a 20-year-old midfielder a debut at Old Trafford and expect them to turn it on?
Would they buy
a right back from Charlton for £1.5 million suddenly he's first choice?
Could they take eight players being out? If you take eight players out of that Chelsea side,
But is it about taking eight players out of the Chelsea squad, or is it about taking eight players out of a Chelsea first choice 11 and seeing... What can they do against Manchester United? As in, if you have eight players missing, what's the plan B? Yeah, granted, Arsenal probably knew they were going to lose to Manchester United with the side they had, but being beaten 8-2 is not just losing to Manchester United with second-string team. I mean, that is a humiliation.
How many points did they drop yesterday?
Hang on, but that's... I mean, if Arsene Wenger is waking up this morning going, listen, we only lost 3 points, it's nothing.
No, I'm not. That's what I said at the beginning. It's very hard to not sound like an apologist on this side, but it's also very... I think it's also very important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and shout, the sky is falling. Like, you admit it, it's an Arsenal second team. They lost 8-2. It's what happened.
You're saying that as if it's like just a drop in the ocean. Well, the second team, they lost 8-2, it's no big deal. They lost 8-2.
United.
This is a historical moment.
It's a historical moment, not a hysterical moment.
This is a watershed moment.
United lost 5-0 to Newcastle in the 90s.
They went on to win the league that season.
And? That's what I mean. It's how you react to it, not the fact that it happens.
I think you're being very optimistic with this.
Do you think they're going to get relegated?
I'm not...
So where are they going to finish? So where
if
are Arsenal going to finish?
For instance, you talk about relegation. Here's something for you. Arsenal don't qualify for Europe this season.
Mm-hmm.
Is that relegation for them?
It's certainly a drop.
And is it certainly, given the circumstances right now, 8 points off Manchester United and Manchester City. Firstly, we're saying with that, they're out for title race. So
but,
what? They're competing for European qualifications.
It against the games last year. There's only 1 point difference between them and Manchester United
last year. Arsenal, 12 months ago, were in a completely contrasting situation to the circumstances they find themselves in now.
Why?
Firstly, they've lost Cesc Fabregas.
But they lost Cesc Fabregas for a good part of last season anyway. But, he was injured.
Yeah, but now he's not just sitting in the stands waving at them, going, I'll be back soon.
Well, there is things that have to be done. There's things that have to be changed.
He's got 3 days in a transfer window left.
Yeah. But he's also got 8 players coming back, or he should be once the suspension's come off. Like, you just can't take a situation and shout the sky is falling.
No, what I will say is...
You sound like Piers Morgan.
I'm not asking for Wenger to be sacked.
Okay.
I'm not asking for him
to
be sacked.
So what are you asking for?
I'm not asking for anything.
That's...
Okay. As I said, after this game, I did not know how to feel about what I had just witnessed. But if you're an Arsenal supporter, and there were fans at that game with their banners saying, Arsenal, we have faith in you. Now, I know the set of circumstances that Arsenal find themselves in at the moment. This is unlike anything they've experienced before. And what I would ask myself if I was an Arsenal supporter is, how did we get here?
Does it matter?
Yeah, it does matter.
It matters. Surely it matters what you do from here, not what happened before.
No, because we've
had... It's nice to know.
Hang on a second. We've had this for 6 years. 6 years. They have not won anything.
Bill Shankly went 7 years.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Alex Ferguson didn't win anything until 1993.
Right.
You can go back and forth all day. If you've got experience at being winners, you can't go 6 years without a trophy and go, listen, everyone relax, I'm a successful manager. You were a successful manager. There are things that Wenger has not done in quite a while. For instance, his ability in the transfer market and picking up young, decent players who he's moulded and developed, and suddenly they're successful. He hasn't done that in, what, at least 5 years? I mean, he's brought in the signings he has made.
Guys like Thomas Rosicki. What's Nasri?
They signed Nasri for 12 million quid from Marseille.
You said a young player.
He was a young player. They spent pretty much extravagantly from an Arsenal perspective. I'm talking about Nicolas Anelka for 500,000, sell him for 30 million. Patrick Vieira, sign him for 1.5 million, sell him for whatever, 25 million. And the stuff that we've become used to Arsenal supporters talk about. Oh, Wenger and transfer, he's brilliant. He's got it. We haven't seen that since that golden generation has left the club. And this, what I've read, Simon Cooper's new book, The Soccerman, he talks about Wenger. He does two different profiles about Wenger as an economist. He's got a degree in economics, you know, a very intelligent guy. One thing about economics, you have to predict based on research. So if somebody says to you, Cesc Fabregas is going to leave the club in 2 years, surely you need to plan for that. If somebody says, Manchester City are going to be knocking on our door, they're going to have much more money than us, surely the onus is on you to come up with a plan so that you're not left staring at situations like this that they find themselves in now.
But surely they did have the plan. The plan might not have worked, but the plan was to develop young players, which they've done. But you can't. My point is, take out United, take out City, you cannot take 8 players out of any other team
and expect them to be competitive. Are we now just talking about one game, though?
Well, that's what we're going to find out.
This taps into a question I have to ask you.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, in a previous employment...
Is this a football question?
This is a football question. Okay. It's not like a life question.
Oh, okay. You're not like asking for advice?
No.
Which I would freely give.
Actually, why not check out Bobby McMahon's consultancy while we're at it? Bobby McMahon Consulting. Check it up online. Very competitively offered rates. Yeah, terrific. Anyway, what I was going to ask you was a couple of years ago, John Giles, who I used to work with back home, we're in an edit suite and we're watching a Premier League game. Can't remember what it was, but there was a free kick. The shot came in on goal, took a deflection and ended up going into the net.
Yep.
And what Giles said to me was, there is a perfect example of why you should never have a defensive wall. There was an awkward pause, mm-hmm. and in my mind I was like, what sort of bizarre statement is that to make? Of course you need... And then I thought about it, and there are so many facets to this. One being, psychologically, if there's no wall in front of a free kick taker, does he still have the same confidence stepping up?
Yeah.
It's just a keeper, but it's 30 yards away from goal, 25 yards away from goal. It still takes a huge effort to get that in the net. Now, you'll also have your players in the box, just strewn around the place. So still, it's going to be quite difficult to score or even get it close to scoring. So it's in that situation. I mean, you know, The wall ended up costing De Gea a line of sight. Once that went past the wall, he had no comeback.
I think it comes down to it's something I've heard before many, many times. Mm. Part of the problem I see with the positioning of the Gerrard free kick is, what do you do with the players? Mm. Like, do you do an Everton, just stand around and watch?
Yeah.
Or do you put them on the goal line? Or do you mark men that aren't actually there? Or perhaps even worse, right? John Giles talking about, well, look at the deflection. But you start putting that number of players randomly into the penalty area, what's the chance of the pinball effect as well in the penalty area? Just basically crank it in there. How many deflections are you going to get? It makes it even more difficult for the goalkeeper. So it might be one of these things, you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't.
That's true. I suppose what I'm getting at is... you know how we've seen the game kind of evolve with stuff like that, simple stuff like set pieces, short corner routines, and how other teams have been creative with corners. You know, somebody flicks a ball away and, well, the ball's in play. Yeah. So play on and you create a chance. So I'm just waiting for that moment when a goalkeeper will say, no wall. And just want to see the free kick taker's reaction. Is he unsettled?
You'd probably get away with it for shock purposes or shock effect for the short term.
Yeah.
We're just absolutely psyching out the taker. Mm. But there again, I go back to, you know, Gerrard was, what, 20 yards there?
Yeah.
Just to the right of the goal as he attacks. It was a pretty good position. Like, if you'd put an attacker in that position, you'd expect him to
hit the target at least.
Hit the target at least and have a very good chance of scoring. Especially when you're then forcing the opposition to be 10 yards away, so they can't shut down quite so quick.
The most amazing thing about the American Samoa story, playing centre-back...
Is Thomas Rongen in charge?
Thomas Rongen is in charge, former MLS coach, former coach of the US under-20s.
Yep.
He lost his job at US earlier this year. American Samoa called, and as you do, dropped everything.
Part of the America franchise, isn't it?
There you go, TM, yes. America Inc., so over he went.
A proud member of.
So over he went to American Samoa. So in Polynesian culture, right? So for instance, I have a child and it's a boy.
You do?
I don't actually. Oh. This is to illustrate a story.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Pay attention. Stay tuned.
Sorry.
Stay tuned, Norm. So I have a kid and it's a boy. But at an early age, I kind of think to myself, the boy is behaving in a quite a feminine way. So you start to wonder whether or not perhaps he may be a gay.
Watching things like what? Home and garden television?
Home and garden television, into kind of home decorating, interior design.
TMZ?
Not TMZ.
No.
More probably Keeping Up with the Kardashians, I'd imagine.
Okay.
But elements like that.
As opposed to Spike.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Playing with trucks.
Yeah. So you get the picture that I'm trying to illustrate here.
I'm trying the hardest to put you off.
Yeah, you are. So in Polynesian culture, families will raise this boy as a female.
Because the proclivity to play with Barbies.
Yes. So they realize that the boy has female tendencies. So they raise the child as a female. It is not male. It is not female, but it's what they call a third gender in Polynesian culture. So the child grows up, behaves like a girl, behaves like a woman, dresses like a woman, has all female inflections. The centre back of the American Samoa team is third gender. So it is a man,
who's
born
been raised
a man,
as a woman,
but has been raised as a woman, behaves like a woman, does everything that woman's do, but there's no operations, there's no biological differences.
Must be good in the air. centre back.
So what Thomas Rongen was saying after the win was that, well, what makes this more, even more amazing is the fact that we basically have a woman playing centre back. And there is your story about American Samoa. This is a cultural story. It's about, you know, how
cross-cultural story. No, I mean, I wasn't meaning cross-dress. I was meaning cross-cultural, because that must be difficult for Thomas Rongen to get his head around if you're not aware of that. Now, you probably are put in a position as being an assistant coach there because you know this stuff now.
Well, yeah, but I thought that this story was out there and people knew about it. But I
did not.
I didn't.
I just followed the scores.
So, yeah, this is, I think in Polynesian culture, the term is a fafanine or fafanine. I don't know about the pronunciation. But it is just, it is Polynesian. It exists only there. And it is amazing. Fascinating, isn't it?
It is. It's a good story. It's a good story. And quite frankly, probably one you don't hear of too often.
Well, there you go. Isn't it?
So,
you learn something. There you go. A third gender. Hey, Bobby, can you do me a favour? Can you just come here and tuck that in for me? Go on.
Sorry.
Can you tuck that in?
Oh, again, we failed to tell the listeners what we're talking about. Okay, on you go.
Dickie Keys and his good old pal there, Grazer, doing a special in sexism. But they should probably remember that when the red button is on the camera that is in studio, that kind of means that it's recording.
Yeah.
I think what it did do was prove just how thick Richard Keys is, firstly. Also, I'd like to point out that during all of this, Richard Keys, as he holed himself up in his house, that reporters went there trying to get him to talk to them. And his wife went out very lovingly to the reporters with tea, biscuits. Here you go. You're right there, pet. Hello, Charlie. Yeah, terrible about Richard, isn't it? Yeah, terrible story. Do you want a fig roll? You know? Yeah. So that's the kind of people that you're dealing with here. Would you throw your hat in the ring? US men's national team job?
Oh, that's a hard one, Owen. You know something? Not a hope.
Really? I reckon you should send your resume.
Think so?
Yeah.
Could you be my assistant?
I'd love it.
Can you do a German accent?
Well, what I could do is I could do my kind of Jurgen Klinsmann accent. Myself and Teddy Sheridan.
This is a long way around to get into this, wasn't it?
We had, back in the days when we played for the Tottenham Hotspurs, when I joined, I did this thing where people accused me of being a diver, and I was not. I wasn't a diver. I just, you know, I would be tackled and would go down, and people accused me of diving and cheating. And so Teddy Sheridan came to me and he said in the dressing room before the game, wouldn't it be hilarious if we did a dive after I scored the goal? It was so funny. And I said, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And so I scored and we did it, and it was hilarious. It was the most funny thing I'd ever seen in my life. And then it was just, oh, it's so funny. Teddy Sheringham, just hilarious guy. So well done, Teddy. I love you. You're great. Fantastic. No, I won't do it. But you come for goal, yeah, me. So in the fucking reserves. Sorry, Harry, I just asked you about... What? Harry, last few days of the transfer window, you know, he's a bit of a wheeler dealer, yeah? I'm not a fucking wheeler dealer. Oh, just fuck off.
I'm a
football manager.
Manager.
Yeah, of course you are. In your dreams, pal.
How SEP's committee of... Honourable People or whatever it was called, Blue Ribbon Committee or something. What was it called?
League of Extraordinary
Gentlemen. Yeah. Was Sean Connery on that?
Okay.
Was he appointed? And if not, why not?
Well, and Sean Connery is there alongside Placido Domingo.
As Alan Quarterman, though.
Obviously. I mean,
he's a real person.
Well, yeah, duh. He was in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You don't get the reference. Favorite ever Sean Connery moment. We mentioned this in the office the other day. He's in The Rock with Nicolas Cage. But he's in The Rock with Nicolas Cage. He comes out with the best line ever.
That was Vosh Bosch again.
No, it wasn't. It's totally different. there's a bit of crossover in some of the impressions. But yeah, so he's in The Rock, and with Nicolas Cage comes out with this amazing line. I thought about it earlier this season about Arsene Wenger, because Arsene Wenger was talking earlier in the season about how, listen, lay off my team, they're only doing the best they can.
Okay.
Sean Connery in The Rock comes out with,
okay,
losers are always moaning about the best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
And on that note, thank you for listening to our Soccer Report Extra podcast. We'll be back next week on behalf of myself, Bobby McMahon, Owen O'Callaghan, and producer Luke Crawford. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. Until the next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. Make sure you never miss another episode. Subscribe through iTunes or listen on your mobile device on demand with Stitcher. For more great soccer news, highlights, and analysis, watch the Fox Soccer Report every night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer and Fox Sports World Canada. And be sure to check out SoccerReportExtra.com daily for previews, opinions, and reviews. Music for this production provided by 2 Cent Bridge.